Welcome to the Open House podcast site, available at openhousecommunity.com.au.
We live in times of the most amazing change in our world, which leaves some of us exhilarated by it all, with all the opportunities and new stuff it opens up to us. Others struggle with so much change. Why can't it be the way it used to be? Of course, it's not only individuals who struggle with it all. Institutions especially often find themselves behind the eight ball, not knowing what to make of this remarkably different new world. Institutions are notoriously, of course, slow to respond and react, let alone change themselves. The Christian Church is one arena where this is especially being played out at the moment, and one of the very many dynamics that's apparently underway, at least in America, is that young people are dropping out of church at an unprecedented rate. I'm wondering, is this a dynamic that we're seeing in Australia? I'd be interested in your views and experiences. 1300 40 2020 or post on our Open House Community Facebook page. Is this a dynamic that's perhaps played out in your life, or have you seen it happening in your church? Are you feeling less and less of a commitment, or less and less bothered with religion, church, faith? Are you someone who can't be bothered? Maybe wholeheartedly rejecting religion, but you're still open to Christian faith, because there's often a world of difference between the two of those. Or maybe you see it all as the same and you're just over it all. Did you once have that sense of commitment only to see it drift? Why did that happen? Maybe you're a parent or grandparent and you've had revealing family discussions or experiences with this question in your family. Give us a call, 1300 40 2020, or post on our Open House Community Facebook page. Maybe your church is on fire with your generation. The connections, the commitment remains strong. What are they doing that's enabling them to stay relevant and in the game? Maybe you're a church minister or leader. You've seen this drift happening and you've been able to arrest it. How did you do that? 1300 40 2020 or on Facebook, Open House Community. So what is the experience in America? Writer and commentator Drew Dick has been reading the latest data and has clearly been doing a great deal of thinking on this. He's the author of Generation X Christian, Why Young Adults Are Leaving the Faith and How to Bring Them Back. Drew joins us tonight from Chicago on Open House. Drew, good evening.
Hey, good evening. Great to be with you.
Yeah, thanks very much for joining us. Before we look at what's particularly happening with younger people, there are changes in the level of commitment across all ages to religion, aren't there, in America?
There, definitely. There have been a couple of recent large-scale studies done in 2009, actually, that showed that a lot more people across all age groups are simply claiming to have no religion. In fact, it was more pronounced among the 18 to 29-year-old set, but even adults are claiming no religion at a much greater rate. And not only is it across the ages, it's across states. You know, in every part of the United States, from the secular Northeast to the religious Bible Belt, in every state of the Union here in the United States, we saw in the period of 18 years since the last similar study was done that there's been a significant rise in the people that are claiming to have no religion whatsoever.
And young people in particular, what are the statistics showing about how they are deserting religion?
There were a couple of studies. The Pew Forum Religion on Public Life did a large study that looked at this set. And what they found was that the 18 to 29-year-olds, 22% of them now claim no religion. And that's up from 11% in 1990. So inside of two decades, the number of young people claiming no religion doubled. And other studies have shown that the trend is even more pronounced. For instance, Robert Putnam and David Campbell, two very prominent social scientists, say that 30 to 40% of young Americans have no religion today versus 5 to 10% a generation ago. So that's significant. And as a Christian, it's very disconcerting to see.
You've clearly done a lot of thinking about why this is happening. What are your thoughts?
Well, it's, you know, there are a lot of factors, obviously. I think part of what we're seeing in these studies is a grand outing of sorts, meaning that in the past, even if you weren't a believer, if you didn't believe in God or you didn't have a particular religion that you really adhered to, you might claim that you did anyway. Whereas now it's become more socially acceptable, maybe, to say, no, I don't identify with any particular religion. But also, I think that there are some, various worldviews, alternative spiritualities that are very attractive, especially for young people, that are competing with Christian faith. And that's basically what I did in my book. You know, I researched, I sought out dozens of 20-somethings, some in their early 30s, but mainly 20-somethings, and listened to their stories about why they left the faith. And I found that, some, it was intellectual objections. I think sometimes we downplay that, but a lot of them had serious intellectual objections to Christian faith, and they weren't able to find people inside the church or in their families that were willing or able to give them good answers to their hard questions. Others, and this was a large minority, I would say, had negative experiences within the church that turned them off the whole idea of God. Either, someone, it could be a pastor or a parent, hurt them in the name of God, and when they grew up, they just kind of pushed it all away. God became guilty by association, and they didn't want anything to do with it. So the reasons are various and complex, but I think we're seeing something in this generation that's pretty unprecedented.
So it's not just a shift away from, say, formalized religion generally, but Christian faith in particular, because those two things are very different.
Sure, exactly. And you've probably heard the mantra of I'm spiritual but not religious.
Yes.
And this is something that happens repeatedly. Sometimes we think when someone leaves the Christian faith that they become an atheist. That's usually not the case. That's a minority of people who leave opt for some sort of strict atheistic worldview. But often they still think of themselves as religious, or not religious, but spiritual people. But they've rejected religion, and in particular, they have a real vitriol toward organized religion. That's become a pejorative, something that's a dirty word in our culture.
Yes. I wonder also, is it a product of a generation that's widely categorized for its lack of commitment and its shifting allegiances in many areas beyond that of faith?
Definitely. I think a lot of older people marvel at how young people can just kind of pick and choose what they want to believe. and people have talked about how religion in the United States among younger people has kind of become the smorgasbord, which is like, a potluck where you can just pick and choose, oh, maybe I'll believe in reincarnation, but I really like Jesus, and maybe I'll adopt some kind of pagan ideas and put it all together. And, there are various reasons for that. I think part of that is the legacy of a philosophical movement called emotivism, where this idea that your beliefs have credibility simply because you chose them and passionately believe them.
Yes.
And we hear people talking about, well, it doesn't matter what you believe, as long as you believe it, to the full or passionately, ardently. And of course, that doesn't bear much intellectual scrutiny. And yet, it's sort of the functional stance of a lot of young people. And they feel very free to kind of pick and choose their beliefs without submitting to any particular system of belief.
Yes. Could it also be partly a result of a drift in the religious commitment of parents and, well, I mean, this generation compared with past generations, kids will feel nowhere near the pressure or even sometimes the guilt to obediently follow in their parents' footsteps to church each week.
Sure, I'm sure that plays a role. And that's, when I wrote my book, it was really parents that I had in mind, because I'd seen so many parents respond poorly when their grown children walked away from the faith. And often, and not to be too judgmental, but I would say, hey, listen, if you're not enjoying your faith, if you're not serious, and you're not living and modeling a dynamic Christian faith, that's going to inspire your kid to want what you have. Don't expect them to come back to that which you don't even seem to be serious about.
Yes.
We've seen that a lot, and there's another mentality too, I think, where parents kind of have this attitude where, I'll take my kids to church or drop them off on a Friday night at a youth group activity at the church and let the professionals make them into good Christians. Well, of course, that's a fantasy. Yeah. Because what goes on in the home 24/7 can't compete with a couple of hours on a Friday night or even an hour and a half on a Sunday. And, so I think it's a wake-up call for parents to get serious about their faith and serious about getting involved in their children's lives when they see their kids start to drift away from the church and even walk away from their faith.
The interesting thing is that despite all this, kids are still connected sometimes or interested or prepared to investigate questions of spirituality.
Mm, definitely. That's one interesting thing that Rodney Stark, a sociologist from Baylor, brought to light, is he looked at the group of what the media called the nuns, that is, those people I referred to earlier that claim no religion. And what he found, much to the dismay of many atheists who were celebrating those gains, is that those people in that group are more likely than the religious people to believe in things like reincarnation and aliens and UFOs and telepathy and some of these, kind of paranormal beliefs. These aren't your kind of hardened secularist, materialist, empirical kind of people. They have a lot of superstitious beliefs, if you will. And, some people have observed there's kind of been a backlash against the dry secularity that has started to come to define the public square that is that many people would like to see expunged of religious expression. And we're still, in my opinion, still spiritually thirsty creatures, and young people certainly not against the idea of spirituality, even the supernatural. That's not a sticking point with the majority of them. What they're more likely to object to when it comes to Christian faith is its exclusivity. That is, these kind of all-or-nothing truth claims that Christianity makes about Jesus being the way to God and that kind of thing, and moral absolutism. Those are usually more of a sticking point than, say, them believing that Jesus rose from the dead or performed miracles, because many of them are very open to the supernatural.
It's a very challenging thing for the church and for the Christian faith, because if it does have as at its core these, as you say, absolutist claims of truth and exclusive claims of truth, how do you explain that or bring people of this generation on board with that?
It's tough. The younger set has been very affected by postmodernism, and that's kind of what I've been referring to.
Yes.
And postmodernism has been defined various ways, but as a worldview, it's the suspicion of absolute truth claims and of moral absolutes. Well, I think the way, what I advise people to do when they're having conversations with these people and they're trying to talk about Christian faith, don't bust out your apologetics and try to cram truth down their throat.
Yes.
That's a necessary conversation, but it's not the one you want to have up front. There are some things about postmodernism that do align and dovetail nicely with Christian beliefs, and one of those things is, for instance, postmodern thinkers have a concern for marginalized people. That is, those people who've traditionally been overlooked, women, the poor, disadvantaged, those kind of folks, they have a heart for those people. And I don't have to tell you how filled with commands to love and take care of the lowly and the marginalized that the Bible has.
Yes.
And just pointing to the example of Jesus. And that's something that's going to resonate with those type of folks.
Yeah.
Secondly, these are people that like to experience spiritual truth rather than reason their way to it. And so instead of getting embroiled in an intellectual debate right off top, you'll want to invite them to serve alongside you. Maybe if your church is headed down to help out at a homeless shelter, that's something they're going to be interested in. And down the road, once you've, they've had that experiential element and they've learned to trust you, then you can have those difficult conversations about truth and about the exclusive claims of the Christian faith. Well, I wrote an article for Christianity Today on this topic, and they asked me to include a sidebar to the article that spotlighted a few things that the church was doing to prevent and reverse this trend. And I ended up not including a sidebar because I couldn't find, and I'm sure they're out there, but I couldn't find, sizable, significant programs that are addressing this. So that was disheartening. So am I optimistic? Not currently. I'm hopeful because I don't know what God has up his sleeve, and I think that more and more people are becoming aware of this trend and the severity of it. However, I don't see a lot happening in the church to change what's happening and stem the exodus. And I think a couple things, almost to a person, the folks that I interviewed, these young people that had rejected the faith, almost to a person, they reported that they were shut down brutally when they expressed doubts in the church.
Yeah.
And what that made me realize, first of all, that's not a great way to handle it when young people have doubt, is
yes.
to refuse to answer their questions or give them kind of trite answers. But second, I realized that in the church, we need to create a space where, A, it's safe to answer, to pose these questions and to air doubts, because young people are going to have them, especially if they're bright and curious. And then, B, we need to provide them with, not in a dominant sort of know-it-all way, but we need to provide them with solid, sophisticated, intelligent answers to their doubts. And the great news is that there are great answers to the questions that they have. But often we've been too lazy or unwilling to answer their questions.
Yes.
And so I think we need to change significantly. And youth ministry is a whole other can of worms. I won't go into that. Maybe we can talk about that down the road here.
Yes, indeed. I mean, we've had this discussion on Open House numbers of times. At the heart of Gen Y, or where social media has taken people, for instance, young and old, is the imperative of it being participatory. No longer do you just get on your soapbox and declare everything to them. They feel they have a legitimate right, as they do, to be able to participate in a conversation about this, and not that all these truth claims be just blurted at them.
So true. Social media has changed the human imagination. And, of course, that's nowhere more true than in the younger set. Some people have started calling them screenagers, these teenagers that are glued to their mobile devices and always on the computer and always connecting to people through the computer. And the church has to make sure that we have a presence there, because it's amazing. Even the conversations I've seen break out on Facebook and in various other social media, meaningful, deep conversations about God, where young people are open to airing those kind of thoughts.
Yes.
But you're right. It can't be a one-way monologue sort of thing. If they aren't able to engage in dialogue, participate in the process of church, they're not going to come. And unfortunately, what we've done, especially here in the state, with many churches that have been quote-unquote successful, especially in reaching the baby boomers, is we've created a very slick, polished, professional form of church where you come and church is done to you rather than you participating in church.
Yes, with you.
The professionals up on the stage do it. And for the younger, first of all, they see that as somewhat phony. They've been advertised to death all their life, too. They've received so many media messages, and they recoil from that sort of presentation that seems inauthentic to them. And secondly, if they can't participate and talk back in those settings, they're not going to come. So yeah, I think in many ways, in many areas of ministry, it requires a fundamental shift.
Yes, very important point. And also the whole question of authenticity. I think it's Rodney Stark who raises the question that these young people have perhaps been hitting the snooze button for religion and Christian faith now, only to return in years to come, maybe in a different context, in marriage or when kids come along. What do you think of that?
Rodney Stark, I have a lot of respect for him.
Yes,
I read a lot of his books, and he makes a good point, and that is, won't they just come back when they're older? Because historically, this is what's happened. We've seen it with the baby boomers, those born between 1946 and 64. Many of them left in the 60s and 70s, and then later came back once they had kids and once they settled down. Well, there are a few reasons why I'm not as optimistic as Stark on this point. And the first is, as I alluded to earlier, young people are leaving the faith at a greater clip than generations of yesteryear. So, some people say 5 to 6 times the historic rate. So it might be an apples to oranges comparison in the first place. Secondly, young adulthood is not what it used to be. For For one, it's much longer. And we've seen a lot of articles about this come out in the New York Times and other secular outlets about this kind of delayed adulthood, where young adults are delaying things like marriage, career, settling down, those type of milestones into their late 20s or even their early 30s. And so what that does is some of those sociological, primary sociological drivers back to religious involvement, like having kids and settling down, are being delayed. And so my thought is, well, in past generations, when those things happened within 2 or 3 years, it's easier to come back to the church. Now that they're being delayed a decade or even more, that makes an automatic return to the church considerably more unlikely. And then my third point, and I don't think this is news to anyone who's been paying attention, is just that there's been a tectonic shift in the culture.
Yes.
Past generations, at least in this country, in the United States, they may have rebelled for a season, but they still inhabited this largely Judeo-Christian culture. But for today's young people, you know, these postmodern thinkers, and really maybe the first generation that's been raised in pluralistic post-Christian America, that cultural gravity back to the faith, back to the church, has weakened, or perhaps in many cases, in many areas of the country, dissipated altogether. So I don't want to be a doomsayer, and of course I hope that they come back, but I'm not banking on an automatic return. And what I think we need to guard against is complacency, and being lackadaisical and saying, oh, you know, kids will be kids and they'll come back. I'm not so sure, and I'm not willing to bank on the fact that they will.
Okay. I wanted to ask you in relation to something you just said. Finally, how much do you think this is an American phenomenon or a Western phenomenon? Because certainly in nations like Africa, China, Christian faith is roaring ahead. So is this largely a U.S. thing or a Western thing?
I'm glad you made that distinction, because it really is different. Some people have responded to my book and articles and said, hey, listen, does this mean that Christianity is in trouble? And my response is, Christianity is just fine. Christendom is just fine. Well, first of all, you know, Jesus, around 2,000 years ago, said that he would build his church and the gates of hell wouldn't stand against it. And so, and you know, here we are today with almost 2 billion people claiming to follow him. And so I guess he wasn't kidding, and I think he's going to keep that promise.
Yes.
But really, when you look around the world, you know, Europe, which is clearly post-Christian, the United States, where religion is maybe stagnant or even in decline. So in the Western world, there's reason for concern. But then you look at the global South, and we're seeing a fluorescence of faith that we haven't seen since the Book of Acts. In South America, whole cities are being swept with revival. In Africa, 100 years ago, 10% of the population was Christian. Today, that number stands at about 54%. Then you have China. David Akeman, Times former correspondent in China, writes that in 20 years, 1 in 3 Chinese people could be Christians. So, you know, we're seeing a fluorescence of faith around the world that's unparalleled. That's incredibly exciting. People are coming to Christian faith in droves. My concern is for the Western world, that we might, if we're not careful, get left behind with what's happening in the global South, and I would hate to see that.
It's been a fascinating discussion, and I thank you so much for your time. Thanks for sparing the time for us, Drew Dick.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
We hope you enjoyed this Open House podcast. Thanks to Christian Super and Real World Technology Solutions. To hear more from Open House, visit openhousecommunity.com.au.